This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
Today we're going to have a good show. We're going to be talking with the president of the National Treasury Employees Union. They've been covering a lot of different issues, trying to fight for government workers on a number of different areas. And I'm talking to Colleen Kelly. She's the president of the National Treasury Employees Union. Colleen, thank you for coming on Fed Access.
Thank you, Derek.
Listen, let's talk about, you know, we just really had a tragic situation, just these past couple of days with what happened in Arizona. You made a statement on your website that you guys released that was really, really kind of telling, and I think people need to hear about it. A lot of times politicians will say a lot of things about federal workers and kind of maybe berate them, belittle, or say certain things about federal workers that doesn't need to be said. But what were you saying in your statement? What was the message you wanted to get across?
That too often politicians and pundits denigrate federal employees and the importance of the work that they do every day. And that kind of rhetoric is not healthy, and it does not help our country. The fact is that too often federal employees in the course of their work often face real threats and real hostility. And there is no one who would disagree that we should be able in this country to engage in spirited debate over policies and programs. But focusing anger on any person or group of people could lead to and has led to tragic consequences. So we're asking and continuing to work on efforts to have the public and politicians and those who choose to disagree with policies that are set by the federal government to recognize and understand the consequences of some of the things that are being said. They're just absolutely inappropriate. There needs to be a respect for federal employees and for the work that they do.
You know, I mean, you touched on and you mentioned not only just this a tragedy that happened in Arizona with the congresswoman, but also, you know, 11 months ago, we had the IRS building attack. If we keep on going back further in history, we have situations with Oklahoma, you know, these other kind of things. Are we at a point, you know, and so we've got a history of people, you know, really kind of getting anti-government and listening to certain people who are pundits and people on the radio and maybe other people who are running for office. I mean, do we need to make a legislation? I mean, how serious do we need to take this? Because, I mean, we keep on talking about this, and it keeps on happening over and over again. If we're looking in the media right now, we're seeing people blaming each other. Somebody's blaming the left. Other people are blaming the right. What needs to happen for people to take this serious?
Well, I don't know what the single answer is. I think if any of us knew that, we would all stand behind it, you know, and make it happen. But the incident you highlight of the attack on the IRS building in Austin, Texas, when that happened, I think we all thought that everyone would take a step back, rethink the things that they say and do so that something like this could never happen again. And, of course, that did not happen. Even in the aftermath of the attack in Austin, there were politicians and pundits who were saying that they could understand how this could happen, and why this kind of thing does happen. And I don't know how anyone could ever say that or support that, even the concept that that's acceptable in society and in our country. It's a moral issue, in my view, as much as anything else.
Definitely. Well, let's move forward and hopefully that people will get the message and people will start to, you know, really control their tongue. I mean, you know, the tongue has power. People are listening. People are hearing what people are saying. So we need to make sure politicians, people on the radio, everybody needs to control their rhetoric. And like you said, have spirited the debate, but it doesn't need to be attack on anybody. You know, you had a big victory, I would probably say, and I'm going to let you describe it, but the Federal Career Internship Program, some changes and some transitions that are going on. The president signed off an executive order completely kind of changing how internship and recent graduate programs are going to be done with the federal government. What's your take on that, Colleen?
This was very, very good news, Derek, and something NTU had worked towards for a number of years. And so we were very pleased. This is a big win for federal employees and for all those who would like to be considered for federal employment, because it's about the process of how federal employees are hired. And
Kyle, let me back it up to give some people some context that they're just kind of first hearing this. Your concern with the Federal Career Internship Program was, why was NTEU fighting against it so much?
Well, you know, the concept of an intern program is one that NTEU has always fully supported, if it is truly an intern program. But when this program was created, even though its name was Federal Career Intern Program, it had nothing to do with an intern program. It was supposedly to provide a structured 2-year training and development program for internships in agencies across the federal government. The first year it was in use, there were 400 hires, which, you know, maybe that makes sense for the size of an intern program. It's at least within, you know, the realm of reasonableness. Last year, over 26,000 employees were hired under the FCIP by agencies, and they were not interns. The problem is this FCIP program has been used by agencies over the years as their primary method of hiring new hires. In the IRS, key enforcement personnel, such as revenue agents, a big occupation in the IRS, were all being hired using this FCIP program. In Customs and Border Protection, every new frontline CBP officer at every airport, seaport, and port of entry across our country who are full-time career employees, every one of them was hired under the FCIP. So NTU's issue was the FCIP program, not what it was called or what it was intended to do, but how it then was actually used by the agencies. It was really misused. And we had concerns about the openness of the program, about the availability of prospective applicants, even finding out about potential job openings because of the way this FCIP program was being used. We had concerns about veterans' preference not being appropriately credited under this program. And it was for that reason that NTU had started legislative efforts a number of years ago. We had filed a lawsuit in 2007 challenging the legality of OPM's rules on the program. So, again, this is a huge win, and it really is the biggest win for the employees who were inappropriately hired under it, as well as for those who are looking for prospective employment opportunities with the federal government in the future.
Now, from what I'm understanding with this new executive order and things that are going forward, people who have been hired under the FCIP program, because maybe there are some people who are getting some kind of concerns about it, they're going to be switched over and converted to competitive service now. Is that correct?
Or yes. This was a major issue for NTEU in our lawsuit, as well as every time I had the opportunity to testify before Congress in an effort to shut this program down. I made it very clear that employees who were hired under this program needed to be held harmless, and they needed to be converted to a competitive service appointment and to be ensured that any commitments the agency made to them from a salary perspective or anything else would be lived up to by the agencies. And that's what this conversion should do. Under the executive order, the FCIP ends on March 1st of 2011. So agencies can no longer use the FCIP hiring after that date. And anyone who is on board in an agency who was hired and has completed 1 year of employment should be converted at that time.
Okay.
Now, we're waiting for regulations to be issued by OPM to clarify a lot of the details about how all of this happens. But that has been a goal of NTU. And it is a commitment, as we understand it, from the administration on the implementation of the termination.
Well, hopefully it will be a smooth process. I mean, we all kind of know sometimes government, the wheels of change will happen slowly. But hopefully people who are already caught into the program, they won't. I mean, I guess my concern, Colleen, is that it ends on March 1. I mean, so are you concerned that people will try to use the FSIP real quick and just try to bring some people in right before the March 1 deadline? Or what are you thinking?
Well, I was concerned about that when I first heard it. I do know that some agencies, some departments, have actually given guidance to agencies to kind of stand down the hiring on this program and to get ready for hiring under true competitive processes that they should have been using all along, so that agencies are ready to do this. So we're watching it closely. I would surely hope agencies do not do that.
Mm-hmm.
And to date, I have not seen any signs that they are. Although that being said, we are not seeing a lot of agencies hiring right now because
they're
all under
process.
Continuing resolution.
Sure, sure.
So it may be less of a risk because of the budget situation.
So it may be kind of perfect timing.
Yes.
We're talking to Colleen Kelly. She's the president of NTEU, the National Treasury Employees Union. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the new hiring program and maybe kind of go into some of the new things that's in the executive order. What's your guys' take on it? Are you supportive of it? Are you concerned about anything? You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're talking about a number of different issues with Colleen Kelly, the president of the National Treasury Employees Union that represents a number of federal. You guys, Colleen, you guys represent what? How many federal agencies?
We represent over 160,000 federal employees in 31 agencies.
Wow. Okay. And with all of that, we've been talking about these federal issues. We've been talking about the internship program and everything else. You know, with this executive order, as I was reading through it, I kind of got maybe some positive sense. I mean, there's this new pathways program, a recent graduates program where you can, 2 years out of school, you can kind of jump into a federal employment type position. An internship program, supporting paid internships within federal agencies. What's your take on the executive order?
Well, I think the new executive order, the new program under the executive order, lays out a viable internship program, one that on its face looks like it will do what it was designed to do. Now, I will say that I'm taking a very cautious approach to this new program.
Mm-hmm.
For a couple of reasons. Number one, this new program would still be an exception to the competitive hiring process.
Because these people are still going to fall, what I was reading is what Schedule D, they're going to still fall under accepted service, right?
They will.
Okay.
Which was the same with the FCIP.
Now, let me back up real quick, Colin, because I think I want to also let people understand the difference between accepted service and competitive service is what? Because some people, even who are working within the federal government, don't completely understand what these differences are.
Well, if you're hired into an accepted service position, you're only eligible for that position. You cannot compete for other positions across the federal government. And it is a process that is very narrowly drawn, which it should be if it's accepted service.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to fall into that category. But it's supposed to be a limited kind of appointment.
Okay.
But it ends up being limiting for the person hired into it, as well as for the rights that they have.
Because it makes it difficult, and I've run in with the number of accepted service employees, it makes it difficult for them to sometimes even transfer into a competitive service agency. I know OPM will sometimes put certain guidelines into bringing people in, and making
exactly.
The conversion easier. But I've run into a number of different people who said that I'm accepted service, and the HR people don't even know the guidelines to switch me.
Yes, and in many cases, they literally have to start over again, the whole application process over again, to get into competitive service.
So your concern is that these are going to put people under accepted service.
Yes, but being under accepted service, if it truly is an internship program that is limited in scope, then the regulations that implement this new program should be very narrowly drawn. That did not happen in the FCIP, and that's part of how FCIP was allowed either intentionally or otherwise, to explode from a program of 400 to become the primary hiring plan for agencies up to, as I said, 26,000 federal employees were hired last year under that program, just in 1 year. And believe me, they were not interns.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So like I said, I'm taking a cautious approach to these programs and watching them closely. One of our big concerns at NTU about this new program is whether or not there will be a cap on the number of positions that can be filled through the program. We believe there should be a cap because, again, it's an accepted service program and it should be very narrowly drawn. So in NTU's view, the regulations need to make clear there is a cap on the number of positions that can be filled through the program rather than a cap on the number of two-year hires under this program who can be converted to competitive service. Because some are talking about capping the number of conversions. Well, why would you cap the number of conversions rather than capping the number of employees brought in under the program from the beginning?
Right.
I can't imagine you would want to create a program that hires, just for example, 2,000 interns and puts a cap on to only convert 500 of them.
Why? Right.
You know, why would you do that? Why wouldn't you cap it on the front end?
You make it a kind of a disadvantaged situation where everybody's using this program as a possible door to enter into the federal government. But then, like you said, if you capped it out that way, you limit it out to the number of people who really have a true entry point.
Right. And if it's really an intern program that should be structured with training opportunities and developmental opportunities, you want to cap the program and design it and define it and implement it so that it truly is an effective internship program.
I mean, and I know we're still waiting for OPM to kind of put out the regulations on this. I mean, have you found that a lot of times, because internship programs kind of really also a lot of times have the only one that's really truly structured. Sometimes agencies have structured ones like the Presidential Management Fellowship Program, but a lot of times internship programs are not as structured as they should be. Is this executive order trying to provide some guidance to say, listen, if you're an agency, we want to see a structured program that has, you know, guidelines, that has a certain kind of training model in it, that has certain kind of promotability and conversion to it. Is it trying to say that we need to completely overhaul the internship process?
Well, that's what we're hoping that it's doing. That's what these regulations are going to address, and that's why they are so important. NTEU is waiting with great interest to see these draft regulations that will be issued by OPM. And, of course, we will comment on them at that time. But to date, they've really focused more in the announcement on who would be eligible to apply, focusing on the two-year graduation criteria, and not just for college graduates, but high school graduates, trade school, graduate school, you know, any programs. And so that's good as far as it goes. But, again, we're very, very concerned about the number that they create, because the last thing we want is for this new Pathways program to turn into another FCIP.
Right. And it could possibly do that very, very easily if it's not done the right way.
That's right.
With all of this, I mean, in terms of, you know, I mean, would you say, I mean, are you optimistic? I mean, are you, would you say that, you know, people who are in school right now and maybe even recent graduates of school, do they have something to look forward to? You know, as you kind of read through this executive order about the pathway programs and everything else, I mean, are we looking at maybe a good 2011 and maybe some further years beyond?
Well, I think the Pathways program, as it's defined so far, we'll see what the regs say, but as it's defined so far, will be good as far as it goes. But again, it's an accepted service program that should be very narrowly drawn.
Right.
Overall, what potential graduates or future graduates should be looking for is true competitive hiring in the civil service so that they have an opportunity for competitive positions, that they can start a career, create opportunities for themselves to work for the federal government and provide service to our country. There will be many more opportunities for hiring under a true competitive system than there should ever be under this Pathways program.
Right.
I think they're both opportunities, but NTEU fully supports competitive hiring in the civil service for everyone, and we see no reason why the existing competitive hiring procedures should not remain, really for some agencies, become the primary hiring method for recent college graduates as well as for everyone else.
So really just, you know, things that fall under the Merit Systems Protection Board and things that fall under competitive, you know, hiring with the federal government, you know, NTEU's take is just put that across the board. You know, just make it across the board and make this the government hiring procedure.
Yes.
Okay.
True competition and true merit systems. And transparent available to all. That's what it should be.
Sure. Do you know, in reading through this kind of this executive order, will this internship and this kind of changes, will this affect unpaid internships? I mean, you know, will there still be kind of, you know, some agencies will bring in unpaid interns. Will this have an impact on those?
You know, I don't know that, Derek. I think we need to wait for the regulations and see some more of the details. They really have not fleshed this out.
When are we anticipating that OPM? I mean, I know you're kind of keeping abreast on it. Do we kind of have a kind of understanding? Is it going to be later on down, maybe in February we'll hear this out?
I have not heard a date. We are watching every day for them because, as I said, we have some concerns already over what we're hearing, and we will know the day they're issued so that we have all the opportunity we need to draft appropriate comments.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I know you guys are kind of working on some legislation, the Brady Bill and some other things that you guys have some real concerns about. I want to talk about that in the next segment. We're talking about NTEU, their legislative actions, their concerns. We've been talking about the Federal Career Internship Program, the abolishment of that program, and what's going into a new phase called the Pathways Program. We've been talking about what NTEU has been doing in terms of following those issues, fighting for certain kind of issues, fighting against certain kind of issues. We're talking to the president, Colleen Kelly. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We've been talking about some changes within the federal government in terms of the internship program. If you're a person who's been in school, a recent graduate who just maybe graduated maybe last year, this has an impact on you. If you're a person who's graduating this year, has an impact on you. If you're in school right now, some of these changes will definitely have an impact on you in terms of getting internships within the federal government. So you need to listen to back to segment one and two. But we're going to move forward. We're talking to the president of the National Treasury Employees Union and Colleen Kelly. And we're going to talk about the next phase of this in terms of legislation action that you guys are following. Colleen, I know there's a bill, what's called the Brady Bill, right? That's really kind of a concern for you guys. What's the concern? What's this bill about and what are you concerned about?
Well, this bill would do a number of things. It would, and actually what we're starts with is adopting some of the proposals that were made in the Deficit Commission report.
Mm-hmm.
But it selectively uses these proposals, and it's focused all on issues about the federal workforce. For example, it includes extending the current 2-year pay freeze on federal pay to 3 years. It includes reducing the total federal workforce by 10% mm-hmm. across government. And it also includes redundant measures for collecting unpaid taxes from the federal workforce. And, of course, everyone would agree that every taxpayer in our country should be paying their taxes. And when they're not, there are appropriate processes and procedures in place and rights that every taxpayer has to get those bills paid. So, you know, while we don't disagree in concept that everyone should be paying their taxes, this goes to putting special and redundant measures in place just for federal employees.
You know, you mentioned the Deficit Commission that has really kind of, you know, some people are supportive of it. Some people are very much so against it. The Deficit Commission, it was also saying what? I mean, I know they mentioned about the reduction of kind of the federal workforce and maybe some changes, but even going further, what were they saying?
Well, there's a long list of proposals, and the ones that NTEU focused on in that we have the, you know, the information and the facts about have to do with the federal workforce. One of the ones that the Deficit Commission proposed that the Brady Bill fails to mention is recognizing that one of the ways to save money for the federal government is to reduce government contracting, and that the dollars that could be saved by cutting government contracting are far more than the dollars that will be saved in these attacks on that are aimed solely at the federal workforce by Brady's bill.
You know, I'm going to play devil's advocate with you right quick, Colleen, because, you know, you're here and kind of some people will say, well, listen, you know, the federal government, we're in this $1 trillion debt. And, you know, we're talking about reducing the workforce. We're talking about maybe keeping federal salaries at a certain kind of way. And some people have argued that federal salaries have gone out of control. I mean, you know, in the media, and I'm just giving this as the devil's advocate.
Sure.
But in the media, they said that federal salaries have, you know, that people in the federal government are now making more than some people in the private sector. You know, I mean, when you hear these kind of attacks, and you hear that, you know, the reduction of the federal workforce is ballooned and everything else. I mean, the federal workforce is ballooned. We need to reduce it to size. I mean, what's your take on this?
Well, for federal employees, those kinds of statements are very disheartening. And they actually make them angry for a very good reason, and that is that those are all fiction rather than fact. We don't mind at all dealing with the facts around federal pay. And we also understand that these are difficult economic times, and federal employees are willing to do our fair share. But NTU is very concerned that federal employees are being singled out for deficit reduction efforts, especially when you look at something like the Brady Bill, when that's all it focuses on. While there are deficit exploding tax cuts, for example, that are being extended to the wealthiest Americans. I mean, there have been stories after stories after stories about that. The documented facts about federal pay are that federal employees are paid on average about 23% less than their private sector counterparts. Now, that varies depending on geography and occupation, but that's an average. But that average comes from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. It comes from survey data that is specific to occupations around the country when you compare them to the federal government. So when federal employees see themselves, you know, targeted or singled out, it's very frustrating because there is not a real understanding in the public of what it means to be a federal employee or of what the salaries really are compared to their education levels and the jobs that they do every day. But it's doubly disheartening when you see a bill like the Brady Bill that is focused only on the federal workforce instead of acknowledging things like the fact that federal contractors who are paid much more than federal employees, by the way, for the work they do, and in 3 years between 2002 and 2005, the federal government added, this number is staggering, 2.4 million contractors to do the work of the federal government. Now, that's more than the total number of federal employees.
So the number of federal employees is what, about, 1.8 or 2 million, close to?
Mm-hmm. A billion, yes. Yes, that's exactly right.
And we're talking about additions. We're not talking about a full
that's
contracting
right.
workforce. We're talking about additions to the workforce.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. So, you know, when you think about the work of the federal government needs to be done. So when somebody like Brady says there should be 10% cut in the federal workforce, well, that doesn't mean none of that work needs to be done or none of that work will get done. It means he wants to turn around and hire more contractors to do the work. Someone has to do it. But there's not a recognition of that. You know, they never finish the conversation or kind of think it through or put forward a real fair picture and an honest picture of what it is their intent is.
You know, this is a political hot potato that you just kind of talking about. I mean, you know, this the contractor workforce. I know Secretary Gates, you know, has tried to deal with it with defense in a number of different issues. And because it's political and because it means jobs and it means a number of different things. I mean, what's the equal balance? I mean, what is the argument if we just kind of had to kind of take it and kind of say, let's be fair across the board? I mean, what is the balance between kind of saying, hey, listen, this is the federal workforce, because I remember in history where there has been reductions in the federal workforce, and all that ended up happening was that we had to rehire those people back, and some agencies suffered. Is that correct?
That is correct. And when the agencies suffer, the taxpayers who depend on the work being done by that agency also do, directly or indirectly. And again, I think that's something, you know, that is never a part of the story about how the work will get done.
Right.
You know, this issue of contractors, it surely is fair to say it's a political hot potato, as you said. But it also is a very real dollar amount in the federal budget every year and every month of every year and every day of every month. And the Deficit Commission did propose to eliminate 250,000 non-defense. This doesn't even go to the Defense Department issue that you mentioned. Non-defense contractors. And according to the commission, this would save about $18.4 billion, with a B, in 2015. So if you want to really make a dent in the deficit, then, you know, I think it's absolutely appropriate to look at everything that could be done. But then don't just single out federal employees and federal agencies, as this Brady Bill does, as the only dent to make in it, when there are truly many more dollars actually could be saved for the government and towards the deficit if you looked at the contractor workforce.
You know, I'm just curious, is, you know, with these commissions and everything else, is there any group who is sitting down at the table that's including you guys, including people from the Deficit Commission, including people from the government, including people from the contractor setting sector, and just all sitting down at the table and kind of working together, you know, because, I mean, I know you guys have to end up reacting to certain things, but is there any group who has just really brought all the constituents and stakeholders together to really kind of hash this out and figure out how can we save money within the federal government without necessarily eliminating critical jobs or mission needed jobs, and but still take a very, very proactive stance in reducing waste?
The short answer to that is no. I'm sure some would say that's what the Deficit Commission's charge was, but I don't know that that's even fair to say that that's what their charge was.
Wow.
But that's about the closest. That's the only thing I'm aware of,
okay.
Derek, that
okay.
is, you know,
Would that be something that you would be supportive of, Colleen?
Sure. I mean, I think it's a huge conversation, and I understand that it's a very real problem, and it's a huge problem, but you can't have these conversations, as you appropriately said, without all the right people in the conversation. One of the things that I don't think ever gets discussed because of who's in the conversation is the fact that severe staffing cuts would make it virtually impossible for federal employees to deliver the quality services that are expected by the American people.
Well, I know you're mentioning, even I'm reading one of your releases, that, you know, FDA had a shortage of 7,500 food inspections. So they have a shortage of food inspection staff. And you've got a number of different critical people who have a lack of adequate staffing, right?
Yes. That is a fact. And that is happening across agencies. I would hope everyone would agree that food safety is sort of critical to our country,
right. Yeah, sure.
And to every individual in our country, and to their families. And these are the kinds of things that have suffered when there have been efforts to decrease agency budgets. And again, when you look at something like the Brady Bill that wants to reduce by the federal workforce by 10%, I mean, that's without any rhyme or reason or analysis or determination of what work is not being done that needs to be done for the public. What work, is there work that could be done better? I would say absolutely, positively, yes. And NTU has always been ready, willing, and able to work with agencies in identifying work processes that could be more efficient and determining better ways to do business. I am a big proponent of the fact that frontline federal employees have a lot of really good ideas about how to do the work of the federal government better.
And I know that, you know, there's been initiatives like Challenge.gov and other initiatives that really get input from federal employees about how to save money within their agencies. And I would hope that's going to be continued as we go forward.
Well, you would hope so. There's a lot to be gained, not just from a budget perspective, but from a getting things done perspective and from a, really utilizing the skills of the federal workforce. And at the same time, trying to offset these inadequate staffing decisions that have been made over the years that have resulted in, as you said, the 7,500 safety inspections, and with that they had to do with inadequate staffing, and you know, the FDA's medical device center personnel has dramatically declined. Customs and Border Protection, where there are officers at, as I said before, at every seaport, airport, and port of entry in our country, every one of those ports are looking at a lack of adequate staffing, as are TSA at our airports.
We've been talking to Colleen Kelly. She's the president of the National Treasury Employees Union. Well, we're going to talk about TSA after this break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And we've been talking to the president of the National Treasury Employees Union, Colleen Kelly, and we've been talking about what issues that they have been covering. Everything from the career, these federal career internship program that's going away, and the new pathways program that's going to be taking its place, and other programs for recent graduates, all the way down to now, we're talking about TSA. Colleen, over the break, we were talking about, TSA, kind of the unique agency, and you know, since it got started up in 2003, you know, they've been doing some great work. But in terms of the employees and their issues that they've had to deal with, they've been trying to get collective bargaining rights. They've been trying to get support from the administration. What's going on right now with the new administrator being brought in, and where is it headed?
Well, with the appointment of and confirmation of John Pistol as the administrator, the question that really has needed answered for TSA employees from the beginning hopefully will finally be answered in the very near future, and that would be the granting of collective bargaining rights for them.
Let me back up because I always want people to understand. Collective bargaining rights for these federal employees, who, and I think TSA falls under accepted service, right?
No, they are not accepted service, but
okay.
When the agency was created, the authority to determine whether they had collective bargain rights or not was given to the secretary at the time, who delegated it to the administrator.
Okay.
And from day one, the first administrator there wrote a 2-sentence memo that said TSA employees will not have collective bargaining rights.
And collective bargaining rights means what? If these TSA employees get these rights, what does that mean?
It would provide them rights under the civil service rules that allow them to elect a representative to be their exclusive representative and to negotiate with TSA on their behalf over the working conditions. And that would include things like how schedules are, how they select their schedules, how leave is approved, appraisals are done. In a place like TSA, where they are under a pay system that is not the GS system, they have their own pay system,
mm-hmm.
and different evaluations and appraisals that are done of their work determine what their pay will be. And they have no one to speak on their behalf on any of these issues. So things like alternate work schedules, things like awards that a organized workforce that has the right to have a representative speak on their behalf can talk to the agency about and set the parameters, determine what the rules will be. That doesn't exist for TSA.
In that whole process, some people have said this throughout this argument, is that, well, giving these collective bargaining rights, this will now allow them to possibly walk off and walk off the floor and not do their responsibilities as transportation security officers and everything else. I mean, when you hear that, what do you say to that?
Well, that would be another one of those pieces of fiction that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
Federal employees cannot walk off the job. When federal employees are hired, they are sworn in and take an oath of office and, swear that they will never take any kind of an action against the federal government. So they cannot do it. It's false. It becomes a good soundbite for the naysayers who do not want to provide these employees with basic rights to have a voice, to have their voice heard, and to elect a representative.
Sometimes I'm puzzled by a lot of different things that become issues. What is the fight against them having these rights?
Derek, it's about fairness. It's about, employees' interest are in having policies that are seen as fair, that are applied fairly across terminals at airports, that are applied fairly across airports. Having a fair grievance procedure where they have a chance for a neutral party to review the actions taken to know that they are being applied fairly and consistently. There should be known rules that employees, abide by and that are applied to everyone, that favoritism is not a factor in how the airport operates or how employees are treated or how their schedules are set. So for the naysayers, they make up ridiculous things that just have no basis in fact in an effort to try to maintain status quo. These employees have been denied collective bargaining rights from the day that the agency stood up. I think it is far past the time that should be granted to them. I am hopeful. I continue to be hopeful after working with Administrator Pistol on this issue, knowing that he is gathering the information he needs to make the decision that he thinks is best for TSA. And for employees, NTU believes for TSA to be the best agency it can be, to be the world-class airline or air passenger transportation agency,
mm-hmm.
which is what it was designed to be. In order to do that, you have to have a workforce who feels like they are valued and respected and that their voice is heard, that there is fairness, consistency, transparency. And most will tell you that there is none of that today in the workforce. And I think that I do believe Administrator Pistol wants to create that kind of a work environment. And in NTU's view, collective bargaining is a big piece of that.
We only got a few seconds left. as you're looking out 2011, we're just getting started. I mean, we're into the first couple of weeks of 2011. As you're looking down the road, I mean, what issues are you seeing as some of the critical ones? And maybe about 30 seconds, Colleen.
I think it's going to be a very challenging year. I think we are going to see more efforts like those outlined in the Brady Bill. I think they will be specifically picking issues that are negative to the federal workforce. And I think there is going to be a real effort to continue to demean the work that they do and to not recognize and respect it.
Is that because of the new Congress?
We can to stop that.
Is that because of the new Congress? I mean, people who have come in kind of under the whole notion of kind of, I won't say anti-government, but really kind of, you know, this had the whole notion of we need to kind of change government around.
I think in large part it is the new Congress, and they've made very clear their intentions. And NTEU is going to be on the front lines doing everything we can to put the facts forward and to show the real faces and the real work of federal employees and the criticality of that to our country.
Well, in the next couple of months, Colleen, I'm going to have you back so we can kind of maybe talk about hopefully it won't be as challenging as you think it may be. Let's hope that people get some sense into their heads and we'll see what happens. But thank you so much, Colleen, for talking about these issues, kind of putting them on the forefront so people will understand them. We will check in with you in a couple of months and see what's going on.
Thank you, Derek.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch, Friday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.